I think sometimes we think about owning ourselves, and all of a sudden it's like, well, that's a lot to own. And it's like, well, just pick one small thing that yeah. is a quirk of yours, or that maybe makes you a little bit different than anybody else, and just work on owning that one little piece. And when you realize that owning it isn't going to actually push you off a cliff, like, you'll be more confident to own the next thing.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Own Your Awkward. I am super excited to have an amazing author, ghostwriter, and author coach with us today, Alyssa Berthium. Alyssa, Allie, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
I'm great. How are you, Andy?
I am excellent. I'm in the Northwest and we are having rare sunny weather for this time of year. So that just lifts spirits everywhere. So
absolutely. Sunshine all the way.
Exactly. So speaking of sunshine and good things, I love to start my podcast out asking each of my guests, you know, with everything going on in the world, what's the most positive thing you see right now?
Oh, gosh.
No pressure. Positive
thing I see right now. Well, you know what? This is so small, and it just happened yesterday, but we have this really lovely dog park in our apartment community. And my son, he's 7, and he loves to meet any and all dogs that walk among us in this community. And every single time we go and we introduce ourselves to the dog owners in this particular pet dog park, they are so welcoming and kind about him coming in and playing with their dogs, petting their dogs, throwing sometimes their toys over the fence into the room on the other side. And it's just really lovely. I feel like being a neighbor or having neighbors is like this lost art form or something.
Yeah.
So for him as a 7-year-old to, you know, talk with adults and ask permission to go and play and to be met with such kindness and acceptance, and then to just chit chat with these people that I don't know from just the fact that they live there, it's really nice and gives me a little bit of courage that if there was like a zombie apocalypse, we might have a chance.
Yeah. I think that's a beautiful thought, because other than the zombie apocalypse, but the idea that there is this community and neighborliness that you're right. That is a lost art form. We've all gotten so, you know, held up in our own bunkers of life and surrounded by technology and entertained within our own spheres that we've walled ourselves off too much from community.
Yeah. Well, and we had to, right, for the last couple of years.
That's true.
The pandemic. And so I think it was already kind of lost due to kind of like tech focused, our lives being more virtual in general. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, then for safety reasons, really having to wall ourselves off and not really reach out to your neighbors, even if you wanted to. So it's nice to be outside again. It's nice that things are opening back up. It's not like COVID is over or gone, but, you know, to be able to kind of reinstate those face-to-face conversations and connections, I think is so important.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I love that you pointed out there too, is that you're only together because of the chance that you all live in the same neighborhood and in the same community. And that's can become such a random slice of life of, you know, people with different jobs, different backgrounds, different, you know, any type of way to diversify it that you can think of, way of thinking, ethnicity, a lot of times just depends on where you're at. And really the only thing in common is where you all landed in that time in life.
Yes, exactly.
I often wonder, you know, you have that feeling of like, you know, I'll see an ambulance get called at a restaurant or someone, you know, and I've been stuck in an elevator a couple times. So like, I think it's like in my head of what random people are you at the mercy of that you could happen to be around at any given time?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, without further ado, we are here to find out about your awkward. And I am just curious, Allie, what's that awkward thing that you have had to own?
Oh my, there are a lot of awkward things. Let's see. One that comes to mind is that probably my very first kiss was with a tree.
Okay.
Own that. We could go there if you'd like. I have to own that I am so interested in people that I tend to gawk. I'm a gawker, as my husband says.
Okay.
And I don't do it because I'm judging. I'm just so fascinated with like people's stories and wondering about them that I end up maybe my eyes are on them a little bit longer than they should be.
Okay.
I gotta own that too. Those are a couple of things. I also like to sniff new books. That's one of my favorite smells in the world.
You're a book
Is a book.
sniffer.
I'm a book
Okay.
sniffer.
So there's a
Absolutely.
few things there. I'm curious about so first of all, I have to admit, I read about the tree kissing. So for people who are listening and watching, Allie has an awesome book. It's called Dear Universe, I Get It Now. And it's almost like reading your diary, like reading the snapshot in time, only reflected back now on the situations, on where you're at in life. If I'm doing justice to explaining that. But there are so many funny anecdotal stories in there with lessons tied to them. And I just love from the very first page where you talk about all of the names have been hidden, but sorry, mom and dad, there was no way around keeping you safe from your identity. It just has really good wit in the whole book. So but I'm curious about this gawking thing. Have you been caught where you're gawking at somebody?
Well, I've been caught by my husband. I've been caught by like my family, and I get it from my dad, in all honesty. He's also a gawker. It's like a genetic thing, I think. Like
Okay.
there's some sort of little gene, like the gawker gene. And like my husband will totally call me out on it and be like, "Hey, are you gonna like stop staring at them anytime soon?" And I don't even really realize that I'm doing it. Like I'm more aware of it now than before because of the fact that he's pointed it out so many times. By the people that I'm looking at, no, not necessarily. But and maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. Like I'm also one of those people who is not afraid of eye contact. And so like I could be at the grocery store and I'll make eye contact with somebody and I will say hello. And then I just have this like way where like I haven't said anything other than hello. And then that person to tell me all about their day or like what just happened before they came into the store. So maybe I'm kind of asking for it, in a way, but I don't
You're
know.
putting
Like
the
I'm just
vibe out there that
putting the vibe out there, like tell me all your
please
things.
bring it on. Maybe that comes from the energy of your first kiss being a tree.
Maybe I'm like, ooh, people are better.
Right.
I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, I've always been curious about people.
Okay. Well, and I think that definitely comes through in your writing. Like you're talking about just what's going on in life and around you, and this whole perception of the way you're taking things in. So tell me how I read about it. So I shouldn't have. I should make let you explain that a little bit more for people who didn't. Although y'all should go buy the book. But tell us, how did this happen with the tree?
How did this happen with the tree? The Cliff Notes version is that I've always been this kind of imaginative and quirky, a little bit bold and unabashed kind of person. And this started at a very young age where I would love to be barefoot outside. We had this cove of trees like right next door to the house. And there was this one stump out there, like a tree had been cut down at some other time. One stump in like the center of all these other trees, and that was like my soapbox, and that was where I made up stories and songs and dances. I loved musicals as a kid, and like each of the trees around this stump would kind of be like a character, like a fill-in,
Okay.
and I would carry on elaborate storylines and plots that I came up with these trees, going from one to another, knowing who they were, in this drama. And you know, somewhere along the way, there has to be a love story, Andy. I mean, this is how musicals go.
That's
And
great.
better than me to be the leading lady. So yeah, somewhere along the way, you know, you gotta like lean in. You gotta go all the way out there if you're gonna do it, to really act on it. And in one of these elaborate plots, you know, I was smooching with a pine or a maple, or I don't know. I don't even know what the trees were at that point in
Yeah.
time, you know, because I was not
Right.
even schooling yet. I was like four, maybe.
So yeah, so there's just so many questions there. I mean, I love the way you describe that because I can just picture it. I mean, it sounds like the perfect setup for a children's tale or this whole TV series about the kid who goes out and creates every episode is a different story with the trees around them and just sitting on that stump in the middle. And it's just, I can see it. It's beautiful. But I'm curious, did it, how long before anybody found out about that, or did you tell anybody? Because I know my first kiss, I got busted right away. I think I was not even kindergarten, if maybe kindergarten, and my brother was like daring me to kiss the little girl across the street. We were the same age, and we kissed in this little cardboard box we had made out of like a refrigerator box or something. And he was above us looking. I was like, oh my God, they kissed. And then of course we both get in trouble. And it was, I'm sure,
Yeah.
this innocent peck on the cheek thing, but
Course. Yeah. Brothers are the worst. My
I
brother went and
know.
had my first kiss with a person, which was at
Okay.
12.
I'm glad it did happen with a person.
Did happen for me. It was with a real person, and I was like 12. I did propose to somebody in kindergarten, and that didn't go so well. The ring was even chucked back at me, and I
Oh
don't think that
no.
person for a while. So it was a real rejection. The trees were never like that. They were very open and welcoming, and everything was very consensual.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I had two neighbor friends that were girls. One was like the year younger than me, and then her sister was 2 years younger than me. And at some point, the three of us were playing in the woods together, and they were doing the same thing. Now, this was like then we had to have a pact that we weren't going to tell anybody about our weirdness, you know, out in the woods.
Right.
So really, I think the weirdness with the trees itself kind of came out also around that 12 year age when my cousin caught me talking to a tree in one of my episodes. He kissing it, he knew that I was talking to it, and that kind of put the kibosh on the play, you know, the imaginary play outside
Yeah.
with myself and whatever tree was available.
Right.
I think that my first kind of like coming out about having kissed trees was the book. In
Okay.
2020, published, people were not new to the idea that I had been playing the trees, like, because my whole family knew that I was always out in the woods when the weather was nice enough. But the kissing stuff, I think they were like, oh wow, this is like way stranger than
She's
realized.
to a level we didn't know about. Oh, that's awesome. I'm curious about if you've done any reflection on what your draw to the trees was early on.
Partially, I think it was instinctual. Like it just felt natural to be out there.
Yeah.
Another part, I think, is kind of geography, right? So I'm a Vermonter, and I mean, where I was growing up in a small town, I mean, trees were like a thing. Like they were just everywhere, you know, especially when you get into your more rural kind of communities. You know, you've got farm fields and trees and mountains. I mean, it's a tree state, really.
Yeah.
So I think partially that as well, but then a lot of my earliest influences when it came to like my favorite books or movies were these characters that were definitely outdoorsy kind of young women. Laura Ingalls, you know, Little House on the Prairie, right?
Right.
Like, you know, Anne of Green Gables, you know, she could imagine her way out of anything.
Yeah.
And definitely, right, was like, you know, walking through the woods, you know, scaring herself into a hole,
Right.
you know, matching these trees, turning into these big monsters. I loved Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Like, you know, I think
Yeah.
so. It was like kind of frontiering women, were some of my earliest kind of influences. And it was like, well, they're outdoors. Like, you know,
Yeah,
me
why would
too.
I why stay inside watching it on TV when all of these trees are right here in my
All these
backyard?
trees are available for me to just like do my own thing and pretend to be Anne or Laura or Dr. Quinn.
Right. You mentioned something and you wrote about it in your book and you mentioned it here a little bit. And I just want to make sure that it doesn't get brushed over, but your cousin called you out for talking to the trees and then you stopped. You just became self-conscious about it. And I've had similar experience. I think a lot of people have where there's a point in life where we feel like the thing that we have safety in or feel good about is not socially acceptable, not cool, not normal. So we stop. Do you remember how that felt in that moment?
Oh my gosh, it was mortifying. I'm not even sure if shame was on my radar because I was just so embarrassed, but I suppose embarrassed is just a shade of shame, really. If my child self would probably have said embarrassed, right? Because I don't think shame would have been a part of my vocabulary. My adult self would say, oh yeah, there must have been a lot of shame there. But like, I mean, just I remember like my face getting really hot, like wanting to kind of slink away, wanting to withdraw, not wanting to be seen. And all of a sudden, it was like this. I would say it was like a clash of worlds, where there was some part of me before that that kind of thought that maybe at 12, I was still maybe I was getting to be a little bit too old to be playing outside in this way, or I was still really attached to my American Girl doll, where a lot of my peers had already kind of tucked theirs away. And I was still kind of like living in that world. And it was like he was kind of like the pinprick in the balloon, you know, like here's outside world and you've been kind of sort of living in this safe space of your own imagination. And he just came and I mean, and then that was it. And it was like, who's he gonna tell? You know, that was the other thing. Who's he gonna go and tell?
How
You
much
know,
more
now it,
shame or embarrassment will there be?
like this used to be this thing that was like mine and a secret, but you know, not I don't think in that at that time a secret in a bad way. But then the idea of him telling other people then made it feel like a shameful secret. Like, man, my cousin's wacky. She's, you know, she's 12 and she's out here talking to trees. Yeah. So I think, and what's interesting too is that then my time spent outside in nature reduced substantially. Like I couldn't even be out there, you know, let alone be caught talking to them. You know, and
Yeah, you
so,
could
and
be
I, and
accused of being too close to the trees.
you know, like tree hugging in a really bad way. And so it took a long time to kind of get back to the woods or get back to the place where I felt the safest and the most myself. And so that's really unfortunate, right? Because when we have that break with ourselves, that can last a really long time. It can send us down so many wrong paths for us that are so misaligned, because of the fear or the pressure of the outside world or, you know, people or whatever it is.
Right. Because here's this thing that's totally innocent and at the heart of who you were that you're told is not okay. And then I imagine you had to have gone through, it's like going through a horrific breakup, or like you had to have missed that time with the trees, not to uproot trauma from that time period, but.
Definitely missed time out there, you know, and it felt kind of like a longing, you know, looking out of the sliding glass door and remembering the days where me and my friends used to just spend hours out in the woods, you know, on our ranch is what we called it. We called it the ranch. And it definitely felt like this lost something that was never going to get reclaimed.
Wow. So then you mentioned that it took a long time to get back to it. How did you get back to that being okay? I imagine it wasn't when you were 13.
It was not. I mean, I think I found little glimpses of solace, like when I was like training in the fall for field hockey, like preseason before we would have games, we would be training, right? And so we would run the cross country trail. Being in the cross country trail, completely covered, you know, by trees and just dirt path, felt comfortable and safe. But it was just like that one season, you know. I think life just kind of like moved along, and I was really away from that, knowing that that was a place to go if I needed quiet time or if I needed to ground myself, or you know, I didn't have the connections. I hadn't made the connections between what more the trees were beyond just like imaginative play. to my spirit and to my self-care and to those types of things. And it wasn't probably until grad school, in all honesty, I was probably mid-20s when I picked up running, because I was processing this trauma that I had experienced in undergrad and was finally dealing with it, facing it head on in graduate school. And I had so much anger that I was like, I had to like exercise it, like not exercise it like running, but exercise it, like get it out of me. And I did that through the form of running, which is exercise. And so there's this beautiful metro park just up the street from my apartment. And this trail went in the woods, you know, it followed along a stream, it went over this little bridge, it went around this pond. You know, there were herons, there were birds, there was deer, there were rabbits. I mean, and when I was there, I felt safe again. And I went, oh my gosh, man, have I been missing the woods for these last like 15 years? And at that point, I was like, all right, I know I got to be with trees. Like, what, you know, when I eventually get a house, we got to have some trees, you know, or wherever I live, I got to have access to some parks or some trails or whatever it is. Like, there has got to be some trees. Because just refinding that grounding and that peace and comfort and safety was so huge. And I was like, man, I wish I had never let somebody else take this away from me.
And so now, do you purposely, I know you said you're in an apartment, but you're sounds like you're close to some nature. Do you create time to be in the trees, or is that something you purposely work in, or is it one of those things where it's like, oh, it's been too long and I finally got to go back into the trees every 3 weeks or once a month?
So, you know, where I live is a little bit more residential, so it is a little bit more difficult, but there are a couple of paths that are within, you know, walk, you know, within distance of a quick drive or a quick walk. And so it's really a matter of either going out of my way to go get some time in the woods, knowing that I need it, knowing that I haven't been there in a while, like, and do it, or it's being really, really present when I'm walking the sidewalks in the residential community to notice the nature that's stuck in between the buildings, because they are like our birds are there, our trees are there, you know, our nature is there if we take the time to notice it. And so, you know, I will, if I'm on the sidewalk and more, you know, communal living, I will at least I will look up to try to notice, okay, there's a tree over here and it's lovely in the sun. Or, you know, if I'm doing gratitude while I'm walking, I will be grateful for the nature, and then I will try to kind of audit my surroundings, like what's around me right now, to pay attention to it, to focus on it. And that does help kind of bring it a little bit more in when I'm not like completely immersed in like a trail or the woods.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful perspective because I feel like sometimes we try to decide things need to be either or. You know, we try to say, well, I'm either in nature or I'm in residential or here at home. And it can be a mix of both. You could live in the woods. Your house could be surrounded by nature and you could insert yourself there, or there could be nature inserted into the area where you live. And it doesn't have to be this, well, I get one thing or I get the other.
Yeah. I mean, off my balcony, we have these beautiful, you know, trees, and then we've got a river. We've got the Winooski River that we get from our balcony. And you know, right now that feels good. It feels good that in the morning when I look out the window, I see a tree line and I see a little bit of water, and there's tons of birds that are chirping in the morning. And while I'm in this huge apartment community, if you looked the opposite direction, you would just see buildings and you would know that 400 apartments or something. In the area. You look this way and your perspective is totally different, right? And it nature and it's the natural world, and that is grounding and that is meditative in the morning, and that is good enough for right now. It's removed from the picture.
Yeah, I love that. I haven't been as aware of how important it is to myself, but where I live, there's across the street. I live on a really busy street. Before we started recording, I had to make sure I closed all the windows because you'll hear the car, the traffic. But the way my window is framed, there's a big tree directly across the street and it fills the whole window. So if I'm sitting at the right height, all I see is the tree. And I love that different times of the year, I'll look up and it's like, oh, it's turned green again, or it's completely dead and it's the middle of winter, and it just reminds me of how this cycle of life. But watching that tree change right out my window is just, it is such a grounding thing, and it makes me feel like I'm not completely in this urban setting that I am in.
I mean, I think the other thing too is that, like, nature has a way of, again, if you're present with it, of reminding us of how kind of small we are in comparison to this much larger world that functions on this kind of like seasons and cycles on its own without, not that we can't impact it, we can. Thank you, pollution. But, like, we know that the leaves are going to drop and they're going to come back again. Like, how crazy is that, And so when we can actually sit with that and be present with that, it's kind of magnificent to consider how many of the things outside of ourselves just continue to be there and function and operate on their own time schedule. And they're not getting all huffy and puffy about like going too fast or too slow. They just are, they exist and they know there's their own natural rhythm. And there's like a lot to be said for what we can learn from what's around us. I'm actually reading a book right now, Andy, that's called Be More Tree.
Oh, I
I
love
cannot,
that.
I'm not even kidding. And each page is like one paragraph of like what you can learn from a particular type of tree based on their like natural elements and natural way of being.
Oh, I love
It's a
that.
cool little book. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like the type of book you would write.
I don't think I quite have gotten to the point in my forestry education to be able to
Okay,
like
fair. Yeah.
figure out which tree is which or what they do or how they exist, but I am really fascinated by them. I have another book that's about how trees actually talk to one another, that I haven't
Okay.
dug into. But they have this really like under kind of the ground, their root system has this interesting way of communicating to one another. And so there's a lot, yeah, there's a lot about trees that I think are really kind of fascinating.
Yeah, very much so. So, have you returned to talking to the trees?
I every now and then will say out loud, like, hey, this is what's up. There's this one tree on this one path that just it makes me think it's not a willow, but it makes me think of the character Grandmother Willow in the Disney animated movie Pocahontas, who has all them and like and there have definitely been times that I have spoken to that particular tree because for whatever reason that tree has spoken to me. And there's also been times where I've been in a really dark place where if nobody's around, I have sat there and I have wept or I have wrapped my arms around it, like, because even though it seems silly to put your arms around the thickness of a trunk that's not moving, really feel like, okay, I'm here. I'm grounded. I'm not going anywhere. This, whatever this is, it sucks, but like it's going to be okay. And like this thing can hold my weight. It's not going to cower under my, my mess of
It
whatever
can
it is.
support me no matter what I'm going through,
Exactly.
no matter how weak
Yeah.
I feel, this will hold me up. I love that. I have don't think I've ever hugged a tree. I know I've done the reach around where I'm trying to see if you can get your arms around a tree, but I haven't actually hugged it with that intent of actually
Yeah.
embracing the tree. I'm gonna try that. There's a city park right over here, and I don't care who's
Yeah.
watching, I'm gonna be out there hugging a tree. Be like, what is that dude doing?
Mean, the irony of all this, right, is like Vermonters are kind of known playfully as being tree huggers because we're usually very environmentally friendly and like we're thinking about trees. But like I think that that's where the word tree hugger comes from. It's like they're protecting the environment. I'm legitimately a tree hugger, not necessarily out of protection of the environment, though I would support that. I'm hugging them. I want to, and sometimes I need it.
Fair, yeah. Well, and like you said with nature, it's just this reminder that there are things that are bigger than ourselves and that endure things. You look at a tree that stands outside, no matter how extreme the weather gets, and it continues to grow. It doesn't just survive, but it continues to grow and produce, fruit and leaves and maple syrup and whatever it's giving us, it's there.
Yeah. Well, isn't that kind of a good like parable for life. You know, it's not usually the good times in life that help us grow, right?
Right.
Like good times in life is when we start to like eat too many potato chips and you know, settle because like everything's hunky dory and we're just like going about whatever we're going to go about.
Yeah.
But like when stuff gets tough and hard that we're pushing ourselves further than we've gone before, stepping outside our comfort zone or needing the resilience or perseverance, you know, to keep going. You know, a lot of those things don't come to mind when everything is just going well. And that's not to say that I want a bunch of stuff to go awry or go wrong. But like, unless you're actively trying to push yourself beyond your comfort zone, it's very easy for all of us to just get into kind of like a default automatic going through the motions kind of state and, you know, not really be understanding that we might not have taken the next step in our own evolution.
Right. So we talked about the gawking, and we talked about the tree hugging, and all of the different little quirky fun things. I'm curious, how does this play into what you're doing now with the writing and the ghost writing and coaching other writers? Has this given you a different perspective? Has it made you look at things in a way where you can kind of challenge other people to go out and hug a tree before they write a story, or how do you play that into what you're doing now?
So I think that like when it comes to like my flavors of awkward, for which there are several, it really boils down to being really confident in who you are and if you're not, figuring out how to be or stretching yourself in new directions so that you learn new things about yourself so that you understand yourself more, and that also can lead to confidence. And those things are really important, you know, as a ghostwriter or a book coach, because my whole goal is to get either my client's voice or my client's whole kind of persona onto the page as authentically them, right? So they have to really know themselves super well and own all of their stuff, awkward, messy, beautiful, terrible. Like they got to own it all. And they also have to be comfortable to be themselves in front of me so that I can then either help them write themselves onto the page or I can write themselves for them. Like, because if any of us were to write a book that was based on our own experiences or thoughts and ideas or whatever, and we came across as we were all knowing and we were all good and we were all pure and we were all perfect, nobody would want to read it because nobody would believe it for one, but two, people would be like, oh my God, I didn't pick up this book so it could be like the Ally or Andy show. Like, I picked up this book because I wanted to get something out of it, right? And the way that we connect to a reader is to show them something that they can relate to, which means that we have to be messy and we have to be multidimensional and we have to be imperfect, right? Because that's what's true. I mean, that's what's human, right? We are all human because of our imperfection and our awkward and our messy and all of the shades of all those things in between. And it would be pretty hard, I think, for me to convince anyone that I worked with to own all of their quirks and all the other things if I wasn't willing to be like, well, let me tell you something. Like, even if weird, let me tell you about me. Like, so by me being able to show up kind of genuinely as I am, you know, people have remarked like, man, like I read your book or I see what you post online and then I meet you and you're like exactly who you come across to be in all those other written forms. And I'm like, well, I freaking hope so. Like that,
That's the plan.
I would hate for it to be any other way. I mean,
It's not
I would feel
supposed to
like
be
that would
fiction.
really out of integrity, and I feel like I'm not trying to pull one over on anyone. You know, I'm not a charlatan. I'm here to be me, and I hope you're here to be you. And so if you want to do that, like let's talk about what that looks like. But you know, by me kind of just keeping it real and being like, I gotta admit that I used to hug trees, or I'm a gawker, or I drop way too many F-bombs, or you know, I sniff books when I get them home. Like that makes me more real. And it also takes a lot of judgment off of the table for people because they're like, oh man, she's just like owning all of these things that she knows about herself. So now I feel safer to own the things about myself, right? And while I gave really small individual examples, this also translates to, you know, somebody opens up a little bit and says, well, there's this like trauma in my past, right? And maybe they don't go any further than that, right? And I'll say, well, you know, I've experienced trauma too, you know, and I'll say what kind of trauma that might have been. And now they're like, okay, like I can say these things to her because she's been through some really difficult times, or she's been in therapy, or she's, you know, she's written about these things and she's withstood being that vulnerable, you know, I can. So I think absolutely owning who you are completely and directly correlates with the work that I do.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful perspective too, because we forget how many times our own bravery gives other people the permission to be brave and to be vulnerable. Yes. They need an example. They need to feel safe, because it, you know, goes back to that 12-year-old being told you can't hug a tree or talk to a tree or kiss a tree. And yet, if there was a community that was like, Allie, we're all talking to trees over here, don't listen to him. You'd be like, oh, it's just one person is trying to shame me. It's okay. But right. We need that. And I think that's beautiful. And it's neat to hear the perspective from someone who's a ghostwriter, because I don't think a lot of people understand how much, as a ghostwriter, you have to get to know your client. And really, it's not just, oh, write me a story, this is what I want it to be about. It's, no, you have to you basically become their best friend, I would think, in order to do that.
I can't tell you how many times I've had clients in the ghostwriting capacity or coaching capacity say to me, I think I just told you something that I haven't even said out loud to my spouse.
Wow.
You know, and I don't take that lightly. Like, that's a sacred thing that they're sharing if they haven't even found a voice yet to say it to their spouse. And it's not that like their spouses are scaring them or like they don't share, you know, what they need to, but it's like when you're working on a book, especially one that's about one's life, there are things that you don't even realize that you need to say out loud that need to go into the book, because you're used to just giving the high level kind of superficial brush over of life events, like this happened, then that happened, then this happened. But like, if I am writing it, or I'm encouraging somebody else from coaching to write a certain, let's say a scene, I'll have to say, well, what did you think in that moment when that person said X, Y, or Z to you? And they're like, oh my gosh, well, what I was thinking was I'd like to hit them with a bus.
Right.
I never said that out loud to anyone, that I had that homicidal thought.
It feels wrong to admit, but it was there. You know? Yeah.
But that authenticates the experience that they had, and all the readers are going to be like, oh yeah, I remember having moments like that where somebody said something to my internal dialogue.
And that would be what I'd be thinking. Right. Yeah.
You know? And then they grapple with that, like, oh my gosh, so this is actually what happened. I had forgotten about that detail. I don't think I've even shared that detail with anybody else. And a lot of the time it's because nobody thought to ask the question.
Yeah.
Because why would anybody have thought to ask that kind of detailed question out of the context of trying to get it all down for somebody else to read it and feel like they're there? So there's this intimacy that has to be developed in these relationships, working with people around their personal stories, because, you know, to some extent you bear it all in order to understand what do we need to write down, what's going to serve the story, what do we not need. But I can't help you decide if we need it or if we don't need it if you don't tell me everything that you could possibly think of.
Right. Yeah, I always feel like when I'm writing, it's like I'm ripping out like my brain and just pouring it all out onto paper to figure out like what needs to go into whatever I'm writing, whether it's a book or an excerpt. And it is shocking. It's like things like, I didn't expect to share that, but it's an important part in order for people to connect or to know where we're going. They have to know what I'm thinking. So shocking. So Allie, what is the best way for people to support you? I know you've got the book out there and you have more stuff in the works. Really looking forward to your next book coming out. What's the best way for people to get online to help you, to support you? Where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah, so people should come on over to therightplacerighttime.com. That's WRITE in the first place and then RIGHT in the second. So therightplacerighttime.com. Jump on the email list is great. I've also got a free, the 5-step writing guide to finishing a memoir that will light up your world in hours. So that's available to people right off the homepage. Just go to guide and you'll find it. And go grab Dear Universe, I Get It Now. Oh my gosh, I would love that. I would love for everybody to be reading that book. And if you're following me in any of those places, and you're picking up Dear Universe, you'll know exactly where to be in touch, to email, to connect. And then, of course, they'll find out about the next book coming out through all that communication.
Definitely. And to make it really easy for you guys, we've got links to the website and to the book right below in the show notes. So click there after you finish the show and be sure to follow Allie everywhere and sign up for that email list. Before we go, Allie, one last thing. What advice would you leave people with on how they can own their awkward, hug a tree, do their thing, and live their best life?
Start small. You don't have to go after like the biggest, awkward thing ever to own. Like, pick a small thing that you know isn't going to kill you to share with like one person, right? And like basically test it. Like, test it out on somebody really safe and like just keep testing it. But I think sometimes we think about owning ourselves and all of a sudden it's like, well, that's a lot to own. And it's like, well, just pick one small thing that is a quirk of yours or that maybe makes you a little bit different than anybody else, and just work on owning that one little piece. And when you realize that owning it isn't going to actually push you off a cliff, like you'll be more confident to own the next thing.
I think that's beautiful, 'cause you don't decide you're going to run a marathon and then go out your door and run 26 miles. You you
Exactly.
run a mile or half a mile, or you walk a quarter mile, whatever you can do. It's you've got to start small.
Exactly.
That is perfect advice. Thank you so much, and thank you, Allie, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
And everybody else, be sure you go out there, follow Allie, check out the website, sign up for the mailing list, and then, of course, own your awkward.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.